Hello and welcome to The Media Show. And in today's programme, paying for content. As RTE awaits what the Minister calls its value for money review, BAI Chairman Bob Collins talks broadcasting futures.
There is a need to begin to re-articulate the priorities for broadcasting, the principal purpose of broadcasting in a dramatically changing environment.
With 12% of advertising going online, Journal.ie boss Brian Fallon says that's good news for Irish media sites.
People, by the virtue of trusting their source of news, also trust the advertising associated with it.
And just how does the Irish Independent see itself online?
Online is a bit like a busy, noisy pub where you might have one decent conversation a night. We want to be the decent conversation online.
But first...
Paperback writers.
Well, you see them on buses, on planes and even on beaches. E-book readers have really taken off here in the last few years. Now, while Irish people still love their paperbacks, book publishing, like the rest of the media, is going digital. Publisher Owen Purcell is with me. But first, Kate McCleary went out and about to check on people's reading habits.
I prefer the paper in my hands. I prefer just paper by itself. I really am not a fan of e-books.
It's a lot easier when you're, like, sitting down, holding it. Don't have to turn the page, you just click a button and it changes.
I like having a book in my hands. I prefer having the cover and everything about it.
To be honest, print books, I like the smell.
I like being able to turn the pages and finish the book. It's kind of a sense of satisfaction when you finish the book.
I prefer the print book, but in bed I use the e-reader because it's lighter and it's easier to turn a page.
I suppose I'm not used to those Kindles, and I like the feel of a book. I don't feel that the Kindle's a book.
A print book, because I like to write in the margins as I read. I dog-ear the pages, I highlight.
It's light and easy to carry on the dart. I have 800 books on it.
Well, I have a Kindle and I just find it very, very handy. It's just easier, it's more private, people don't know what you're reading.
A reporter, Kate, there. I love the way that man preferred his e-reader so people couldn't see what he was reading on the train. Owen Purcell, you are commissioning editor at New Island Books. Books are your business. So how much has digital changed the book world?
Well, it's impacting it very dramatically. For instance, I suppose Amazon more than anybody else have changed the game. You're seeing somewhere in the region of 30% of book sales in the US now in digital form, and in the UK of around 20%. In Ireland, it's a little bit slower. There are some publishers that are seeing maybe 10%, but as an overall market, I'd say we're still below 5%. The biggest shift that the internet has brought about in the book market is the actual endangerment of bookshops. And now that those online booksellers are also the primary movers in the ebook market, they're kind of capturing more market share, and actual bookshops are not doing half as well as they used to. And even in Ireland, we're seeing that pattern repeated. I mean, we've got 71% of Irish people already have smartphones. So if that's the case, then 71% of Irish people have an e-reader, because everybody can read e-books on their phone and they can read it from multiple suppliers. So you've got Kobo, Amazon, Sony and Barnes & Noble, who have a product called Nook. So all of those services provide an app for your smartphone where you can read an e-book straight in your phone. So in that sense, most people have an e-reader, they just don't know it.
And aside from e-readers, Owen, what about self-publishing? You know, the fact that people can now publish their own books online.
I just saw a figure yesterday that self-published books might account for 25% of e-book sales in the US. Now, I don't know how that translates to Ireland yet, but I think it's a very interesting statistic.
And of course, Owen, when you talk about self-publishing, one book immediately springs to mind, 50 Shades.
The biggest phenomenon in publishing in the last 12 months or 16 months has been E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey, which has sold in the US 5 million e-books last year, which is just incredible, and has delivered to Random House, the publisher who bought the trilogy, in their best year of publishing ever. So it just goes to show that you can start off in self-publishing land and move into traditional publishing land quite quickly.
So, Owen, will all this mean that the bookshop around the corner is going to disappear?
I wouldn't say that we'll ever be without bookstores, but we'll probably at some point in the next 5 or 10 years see a considerable reduction in the number of bookstores. It seems to me unlikely that if online sales of physical books grow alongside online sales of e-books, that the number of bookstores that we currently have can continue to trade. Now, what I would imagine will happen is that the luckier and the better run bookstores will survive.
Yeah, Owen, well, let's hope you're right about that. That was Owen Purcell there of New Island Books. Well, this week at the annual meeting of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, the IBI, Minister Pat Rabbitt faced some strong criticism over RTE's funding and the case for the IBI members to get a slice of the new broadcasting charge, which, as you heard him say here a few weeks back, comes into place next year. The minister said he had been expecting to get the BAI's review of RTE funding this week, but it later transpired that the review and the BAI recommendations on that review won't get to the minister's desk for a few weeks yet. Bob Collins, chairman of BAI, joins me now. Bob, the minister calls it a value for money review of RTE, but what exactly is it and why is the BAI doing it?
The Broadcasting Act requires the BAI on an annual basis to review the two public broadcasters, RTE and TG Cahir, their performance relative to the statement of commitments that they make at the beginning of each year, and also to look at the issue of the adequacy of their public funding. It also requires an initial and then at 5-yearly intervals, a fairly major and fundamental review of the adequacy of public funding. That's the exercise that we're involved in at the moment. Of course, it takes account of value for money. It takes account of the way in which resources are used, the efficiency with which they're used, and crucially, the extent to which the schedules that are offered meet what one would deem to be the obligations of a public broadcaster at this time of the 21st century. The broadcasters are editorially independent, and nothing that the BAI will do in this review is intended to or will infringe or challenge that independence. It is not an easy task. A review has been taking place with the active involvement of the two broadcasters. They have submitted their 5-year plans. They have been the subject of independent, detailed, vigilant analysis. The authority met and had this second extensive review of that material, and will, over the course of the next number of weeks, complete its report. The report that the authority will submit to the minister is not simply a copy of the document that has been provided to us by the consultants we engaged to assist us in the process. I think there may be some misunderstanding by a range of people that the BAI was in this respect something of a post office, where item A was delivered on morning Monday and it was dispatched on morning Tuesday. We have a significant degree of work to do in the next number of weeks to fashion recommendations for the minister in relation to this issue of public funding, and that we will do.
Bob, this report seems to be making quite a lot of people anxious. We've seen several interested parties getting their retaliation in first, if you like. Last week, it was Noel Curran in the Irish Times. This week, Dave McRedmond in the same paper arguing that RTE takes out too much commercial revenue from the market. There's a lot hanging on this report.
I think if there's an anxiety, it doesn't derive from the fact that the BAI is conducting this report. I think it derives from the world in which we live. A review of the funding of public broadcasters cannot take place in isolation from what's happening in the entire world of broadcasting. And that's a fundamental principle as far as the BAI is concerned. It's inevitable that people will want to state clearly what their strategic priorities are and what their points of view are, and set out, perhaps in unexpected ways sometimes, how they might view the future. The future can only work if it is, at least in some respects, performing in unexpected ways. And part of the leadership challenge in any environment is to bring people to unfamiliar destinations. And that perhaps is in part some of the task that we have in the BAI in this process.
So can you give us an idea when it will be issued to the minister?
I would hope that the minister will have it within about 3 weeks.
Bob, just to go back to that IBI conference this week, one of the things that the IBI president, John Purcell, called for was a broadcasting forum. Now, he made the point that there has been a lot of megaphone diplomacy, as he put it, going on across the sector lately, with people setting out their stalls but not actually engaging directly with one another. Now, clearly there is a need for somewhere that the sector can engage constructively. Isn't that a role for the BAI to facilitate and promote debate?
From the beginning of the BAI's existence, we've identified the need to have some mechanism whereby we can encourage and promote conversation and discussion, both public and private, engaging with people who are within the broadcasting sector, but also with the public who are the primary interest of the broadcasting sector. And we will do a number of things in the current year and a range of things next year to facilitate, encourage, promote that kind of conversation, that kind of discussion, not just in the context of the review of the public funding of broadcasting that's taking place at the moment, but in the context of the kind of changes that are taking place. There is a need to begin to rearticulate the priorities for broadcasting, the principal purpose of broadcasting in a dramatically changing environment. And we undoubtedly have a role, and we see ourselves as having a role, even if it's not one that the statute identifies. And there is more that binds and unites people who are engaged in broadcasting in this state than divides them. Because the biggest challenge for broadcasting in Ireland is not their domestic competitors. The biggest challenge for broadcasting in Ireland is on the television side. The growing tsunami of channels that are available here and that take away advertising from here without making any contribution to the domestic broadcasting community. And on the other hand, the changes in the online world with all of the implications that that has in terms not just of revenue streams, but of audiences' attention. Those two issues, when taken together, represent the single most significant challenge. And it's not just challenges for the individual broadcasters, it seems to me. It's a challenge for the kind of discourse that will take place in this community, in this state. And that has huge implications for public policy. It is difficult to frame public policy. It is difficult to develop legislative proposals in circumstances where you can't be certain that a significant body of the public is engaging with you and hearing your proposals through the channels that are available in this state.
So, Bob, given everything you've been saying there about the enormous pressures on the sector, what is the future for broadcasting?
I think there is an urgent need to look at the overall media environment, to identify the extent to which we can sustain what we have. I think there probably is a need for some fairly radical rethinking of structures or patterns. And I think that the worst starting point for a conversation about reimagining media in Ireland is that everything remains precisely as it is at the moment. One of the minor miracles, perhaps not so minor a miracle, is that after 5-6 years of really difficult recession and really difficult time in terms particularly of those broadcasters who depend in large measure or exclusively on advertising revenue, is the extent that there have not been significant casualties. Yes, people's budgets have been significantly affected. Yes, schedules have been under pressure. Yes, people are being paid less and fewer of them are being paid at all. But the range of broadcasters is not less than it was. That, to me, is a remarkable achievement. And I think that public broadcasters, commercial broadcasters, all of them have made really serious attempts, and I think in most respects, fairly successful attempts, to sustain schedules and to try to ensure that the audience has the range of content with which it was familiar, but also which it needs. There isn't going to be an easy solution, way that King Canute can stop the tide, not this particular one anyway. There is no way in which you can persuade a generation of younger people to ignore the technologies that are of their time. But the challenge that that brings with us is to find ways in which that generation of young and not so young people who are completely attuned with what the new technologies have to offer are served and are addressed in language in which they want to speak and in which they want to be heard. There are some really significant challenges for broadcasting and for the media as a whole. And I think that there is a really big issue, not just for individual broadcasters, not just for a regulator like the BAI, but for Ireland as a state and as a community.
And that was Bob Collins, chairman of the BAI there. Well, last week we heard from Irish Times managing director Liam Kavanagh on the challenges the Irish Times faces to replace print revenue in the digital space. While the Times is still deciding on its paywall route, its competitor, the Irish Independent, has made it clear that it is going for a soft paywall, a metered system, which will allow some free access before asking you to subscribe and pay. Editor Stephen Ray is not long in the job, and he has been busy repositioning the paper digitally. I talked to him earlier in the week.
Since I took over in September of last year, we've reorganised the newsroom and really beefed up our online presence. We've sort of transferred a lot of journalists into online. And I know it's not a new concept per se, but the whole idea of a mojo, the mobile journalist, for example, our guys are doing video. We can do audio. And also, you know, obviously we're doing the social media stuff like Twitter and Facebook too. And I suppose an example of the mojo would have been the Boston bombings recently, where we decided, you know, we had to cover it on the ground in the United States. So the journalist we sent was actually from our online team rather than the print newsroom per se. So Caitlin McBride travelled to Boston to cover the bombings for us. So she filed back video. She filed for the print edition and she also covered the whole social media aspect for us. And Caitlin was up for 36 hours, filed some fantastic video for us, and that really drove an awful lot of traffic online. Also, for example, Fiona Sheen, who covered the Taoiseach's visit to the United States for St. Patrick's Day, Fiona travelled with the official party and Fiona did a lot of video for us. He filed back live video, live feeds. I think he was probably one of the first journalists at the top of Freedom Tower, and he used his iPad to film all of New York from Freedom Tower. It was quite good stuff online. When he travelled to San Francisco, he saw the Taoiseach standing next to all these California Highway Patrol motorcycles, Harley Davidsons. He thought it was a great picture and he said, gosh, if only I had a photographer here now. He got, damn it, sure, I'll do it myself, and took the picture with his own iPad, and that made the front page of the Irish Independent. The concept of the mojo is very much alive and well, and it's progressing very much in independent newspapers. I think, you know, a lot of journalists are big fans of Borgen, the BBC4 political drama, the Danish political drama. Even last September, I was watching it, and, you know, the villain in the series is this guy, the editor of The Express, but it's very much a multimedia newsroom. They've got video, and the editor speaks on video and does a video blog, and thought, isn't this great? But 6 months on, we're doing very much that kind of stuff in INM, and that's the future for us. It's multimedia platform. We're going to be platform neutral. We're going to be across all channels. Big plans for the future in probably having Ireland's first multimedia newsroom.
So, Stephen, the new website design has had its critics. Are you happy with it?
Our March figures show that traffic is up 70% year on year. The latest Comscore figures show that the Irish Independent website is the largest news website on the island, far ahead of RT News, The Irish Times, Mail Online, BBC. Certainly, we're going to dedicate a lot more people to online, going to do a lot more video and, as I say, a lot more social media.
So, Stephen, you now say it's a news organisation, not a newspaper you've got in the Irish Independent. So is it digital first for you?
Obviously, that's the buzzword of now, but I don't see it. I think it's brand first. It's title first. It's all about independent, whether that's online or in print. I see it as title first.
I saw your chairman last week, Vincent Crowley, confirming that there is going to be paywall in place by the autumn. Do you think your readers will pay for content?
Isn't it funny that we're actually talking about paying for journalism now? Even 2 years ago, people would have laughed at you and described you as a Neanderthal if you're talking about paying for journalism. But we've moved on big time. The whole advent of apps and tablets has just revolutionised the whole journalism sphere. So people are now willing to pay for apps. People are also willing to pay for trust. I think, you know, online is a bit like a busy, noisy pub, where you might have one decent conversation a night. And I think we want to be the decent conversation online when it comes to trust and comes to trusted journalism, because people believe what's in the Irish Independent. People believe what's on independent.ie. And I think, you know, people like Dermot MacDonald, Fiona Sheehan, trusted brands in their own right, but trusted journalists within in INM, people will pay for their opinions and their analysis. I think politics and business are going to be a huge part of our online offering. And that particularly authoritative analysis and comment, that's why people will turn to independent.ie and our apps. So yes, people will pay for journalism, people will pay for trust, and the amount of people we initially think will buy us online, we're pretty conservative about that. Forward-looking, we're very positive about it, and we've been around for 100 years. I think we'll be around for another 100 years because Independent is a trusted brand.
You had what you called a squeaky bum moment when you finally ditched the broadsheet and went completely compact last December. How is that working out?
It's been terrific, actually. Obviously, when I took over in September, we were still doing a broadsheet and a compact, and it was taking up an awful lot of production time. And I think that was time that was better served to doing our journalism rather than production per se. So obviously, you know, we thought about it a lot. We did some surveys and some focus groups to see what people actually wanted. What people actually want is quality journalism. The physical dynamic of the paper isn't as important. So it was a big decision to take to end the broadsheet after all these decades and generations. But feedback has been very positive. Actually, very, very few. A lot fewer letters and complaints than I would have thought. The main problem people had was the broadsheet on the Monday used to have a pullout compact sports section. I think a lot of people missed splitting the paper. So we brought back our sports supplement on the Monday within the compact, and people have been very happy with that. Sales have been very strong. We're way ahead of the curve. Our market share is increasing. So these are things we're quite happy about.
Do you think that there'll always be a demand then for print?
There has been a very disruptive period for newspapers and journalism per se, and disruption I can see it happening for at least a generation. But we have to be ahead of that disruption, and we have to see what people will require. Ultimately, print will probably end. I know The Economist said it would end on a specific date. I couldn't say that. But I would say we're probably at least 10 years away from the last print edition of the paper.
Now, I know Vincent Crowley was very upbeat about your prospects at the launch of the 2012 figures last week, pointing out that despite losses, you have an underlying operating profit, I think it's 60 million. But in the context of a 400 million debt, those figures are pretty precarious. Are you looking at redundancies, do you think?
INM has announced a new deal, which was announced during the week. So that debt has been a fraction of that debt now.
With the South African sale?
Yes, with the sale of South Africa and a deal with the banks. So going forward, the debt is very manageable and the prospects for the paper are quite good.
You didn't answer the redundancies question. Will there be job
losses? Sure. Well, Vince Crowley, our CEO, announced that there would be redundancies, 100 redundancies across the island of Ireland. That includes all the titles.
We're hoping they'll be mostly voluntary.
Obviously, yes. Yeah, I think so. That would be the hope.
Now, you're following in some pretty auspicious footsteps. I think Finny Doyle was in position for 25 years. Do you think the days of the long-serving editor, old-style, patriarchal figure are gone?
I think so. I can't see myself there for 25 years. And I don't think anybody possibly could see in any management or leadership role for 25 years. I think the main thing is about being a strong leader, having a strong team around you, being able to delegate and appointing some key people to key positions. So, no, I don't see myself there for 25 years or anything like that.
And that was Stephen Ray, editor of the Irish Independent there. Now, while traditional newspapers like the Irish Times and Independent are trying to figure out how to make online pay, newcomers like the Journal.ie have been doing that from day one. Brian Fallon and his brother Eamon created the property website Daft.ie 15 years ago, and from that success have built a digital media network, including the online news site TheJournal.ie. Now, Brian, you're part of one of the few networks which has both traditional and new media players in it, the Association of Online Publishers, and I know you've been doing some research on advertising online, but first of all, give us a sense of the story behind your own company, Distilled Media.
When we had Daft in a place where it was an established business, we started looking at other opportunities, and that was around 2008. And we invested in a company called Boards.ie, and since then started two new companies, one called TheJournal.ie, which is an online-only news publication. It also has a number of other brands like TheScore.ie for sport and DailyEdge.ie for entertainment. And we also spun Adverts.ie, a classifieds, person-to-person classifieds business, out of Boards.ie. And that's basically how we came to being in a place where there was four companies and we came up with the name Distilled Media.
Now tell me a bit about The Journal. Your background's clearly not news.
My background, I suppose, is trying to understand what will make a great web product. And around the time, I could see that, particularly in the US, there was a lot of online-only news organizations starting. And a lot of what they were doing was very compelling. I actually found myself, during my research, becoming addicted to reading these online-only news publications. And the reason being is that in the same way how, let's say, TV is different to radio and radio is different to print, online is different to print. And up until that point in Ireland, I think the news, the Irish news that you could get online was basically a replica of print news. And that's where the market opportunity came from. I felt, not from a journalism perspective, but actually from a consumer perspective, that there was a huge need in the market for a real online-only player and one that really took advantage of the medium. We're pushing on about 30 people now, and that's primarily editorial staff. We put as much of our efforts and resources into content as possible. On a daily basis, we probably reach about 160 to maybe 180,000 people. After 2.5 years, we're actually ecstatic with the reach that we've managed to build.
Now, Brian, you're part of the Association of Online Publishers, which includes old hands like the Irish Times, RTE, and newcomers like yourself and Entertainment.ie. You've been doing some online research. What's it been telling you?
We've just commissioned a piece of research, which interestingly shows two key things. The first is that an Irish internet user is more likely to remember that they've even seen advertising when it was on a domestic Irish site. And the second thing is that not only are they more likely to remember it, but when they actually remember seeing an ad for, let's say, a brand that could be targeted at English audience or an Irish audience because you're on a UK site or people aren't quite sure where it's targeted. But even when they see an ad, they're 8 times more likely to think it's meant for them when they read it on an Irish site. Actually, another piece of research that the Association of Online Publishers commissioned last year also showed that people, by the virtue of trusting their source of news, also trust the advertising associated with it. So, I mean, from a media perspective, that's a very good result.
And 12%, I think, of advertising is now online.
Yeah, I think the digital sector is only going to grow more as an increasing percentage of people's time in any given week is spent online. I think when you look in any given week, you know, we've only got so much time to consume media, and digital is taking an increasing portion of that, particularly when you look at how often people have their smartphones in their hands.
So, Brian, what do you say to the criticism that you basically rip off expensive journalism from The Independent, from The Times, and repackage it?
You know, the newsroom in The Journal is a newsroom like any other. There's a team of close to close to 30 journalists working every single day of the week, producing content from 6 in the morning till the end of the day, sometimes till the early hours of the morning. We've a very dedicated team that, you know, if something's breaking in the middle of the night, like let's say the situation in Boston last week, the last person left the office at 6 a.m. It's the same as any other kind of journalistic organization. It's you're getting on the phones, you're talking to politicians, you're following up leads. But the key difference is that we're producing it for an online audience. You know, the two key trends that we're riding in the journal, I suppose, is social media and mobile.
Do you actually send reporters out on stories? Would you have had somebody at the Abortion Act press conference on Wednesday morning?
We had someone at the Abortion Act. We had someone down in Galway last week for the Civita hearing. When it's required, we'll send someone to these hearings. And when it's content that people want to read about, we figure out the most cost-efficient way, like any other organisation, the most cost-efficient way of producing the content.
Now, I know that online doesn't come under the remit of the Press Council. And when the Minister was in with us a few weeks ago, he suggested that it might be possible to extend their powers to cover guys like yourselves. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've applied to become a member of the Press Council. We actually applied, I think, maybe 18 months ago. It's something that we're very interested in, and it's an ongoing process. The reason we'd like to be in the Press Council is simply because if you ask a journal reader, is the journal a newspaper? They'll look at you with a question on the face. I mean, of course it is. And therefore, I think that a journal reader should have the same protections reading the journal as they would get reading any other newspaper. And if they have an issue or if they're looking for recourse on whatever it could be, that they should have the same routes available to them as if published anywhere else.
So, Brian, is people like you who are going to be the death of the print newspaper?
I don't think that our number one competitor is newspapers. I think the journal, if you think about it in terms of how people use it, it's a digital product. And the key digital competitors are Facebook and Twitter. You know, people who buy newspapers, they buy newspapers. That's what they do. And I think I'm just including myself here. I think there's a large audience of people who now don't buy newspapers and never will. I'm definitely one of those people simply because I grew up with having a phone in my pocket and I've always been around computers, I suppose. So the internet is the place I go to for my news, and they're the audience that we're trying to satisfy.
Brian Fallon of journal.ie and spokesperson for the AOP. You've been listening to The Media Show with Brenda Power. Next week, a year after the Primetime Investigates debacle, how has RTE repaired the damage? RTE's news boss, Kevin Backhurst, is with me in studio. And post the Leveson inquiry, will the Royal Charter work?
Everything has now been thrown into a certain amount of disarray, and David Cameron finds himself in quite a difficult position.
Join us then.